obsession he seems to have for guns.
Maybe a boy likes to feel he's best at something. So I saved up, and one Christmas I got him a brand new BB gun. It's something else about guns that gets him.
Do I hear a challenge? Very interesting indeed. The star is always delighted to accept these small donations.
You don't own me, Packy.
I saw the two of you. The way you're looking at each other tonight. Like a couple of wild animals. Almost scared me.
Should.
Somebody might get hurt.
How can anybody get hurt if we don't hurt them? I want to do a little living.
What's your idea of living?
It's not $40 a week.
Tell me, when did you get this idea?
Oh, I've always had it. Ever since I can remember. If I don't get it one way, I'll get it the other. I told you I was no good. I didn't kid you, did I? Well, now you know. Shoot!
Welcome to Movie Umpers. My name is Bob Sham.
I'm Angela.
This sounds your maybe dogs. Mm-hmm. And all month, the left-hand endeavor. That's what we call our noir month. 5 days a week, all month long. We're talking about a classic film noir. Watching some wild stuff that we haven't seen before in a genre that we've really come to love. And they get kind of weird. And this one, no less so, but you can't say it's not entertaining.
That's true.
We're talking about a wild one here in the movie Gun Crazy from 1950, directed by Joseph H. Lewis. Written, original credit goes to McKinley Cantor, who wrote the original short story, which appeared in Saturday Evening mm-hmm. Post. That was also called Gun Crazy and also known as Deadly as the Female.
Which, yes.
Deadly is the Female. McKinley Cantor, I'm not sure literally how much screen adapting or screenwriting he did, even though they did do the original story. But it wasn't credited until years later or known publicly. But the actual screenwriter of the movie was Dalton Trumbo. Maybe you've heard that name before.
Yeah.
They made a movie about this guy, starring Bryan Cranston some years back. But Trumbo was a writer who was blacklisted pretty early on in the McCarthy era, near the end of the 40s. He was actually arrested in Kentucky somewhere and served a little bit of time. And of course, he was chased by the House of Un-American Activities, like many actors, writers, and producers were at the time. And it's interesting looking back to, you know, eventually, Trumbo would, I think he got his credit back by the time Spartacus came out, the Kubrick movie Spartacus. But after he got out of a Kentucky jail he literally did join like socialist parties, communist movements. He was sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, they would just take everything away from you just for having that economic ideology. But to say he wasn't sympathetic, it just wasn't true. But he fled to Mexico City. And the industry did kind of protect them the best they could. When he went to Mexico City, he wrote tons of movies. A lot of more B-movies. And one of the movies he wrote was this adaptation of the McKinley Cantor short story, Gun Crazy. And, you know, Nicholas Ray, who we'll talk about another movie for the end of the month. He did They Live by Night, Rebel Without a Cause. He was also known in question for having some, you know, past connections with socialist student groups and movements. That was also true in his case as well. But he was a little more protected. I think Howard Hughes himself kind of protected him a little bit. Once Howard, I think while he was the owner of RKO. It's just kind of interesting, like, who got, you know, there's some names from this time that probably got washed away to time. And, like, unless you know the details or very savvy on a lot of these old movies, they could just be gone. But a few of these guys, like Trumbo, you know, the government came after them, but the studios kind of let them sneak, you know? But I wonder how much they got paid for not being able to have a credit on this movie. So you don't see Dalton Trumbo's name, but he is the screenwriter for this movie. And McKinley is more of the front, the safe front.
You know, it was definitely just a, we'll give you this flat amount for this.
And yeah.
And goodbye.
I mean, he was writing.
Which probably was anyway.
He was writing B movies, and I'm sure that went far in Mexico City in terms of getting some checks. But yes, Gun Crazy. Very, Trumbo is a well-regarded writer. But overall, I don't know. This one is one where maybe the Hayes airification really made things a little weird. Because there's almost this moral tell where we're dealing with someone who, people, two people, who are gun-obsessed. I mean, they say it's gun-crazy, but they're literally, you could call them gun-horny. Or gun-perverts. They're literally gun-perverts. Right? They are. They're gun-perverts. He can't control himself. We see our lead... Yeah. As played by John Dahl, is played Barton Bart Terr is played by John Dahl. We see him as a kid, and
he's about 14.
The mom gives him a BB gun, and
it's his older sister. Something happened to their parents.
Right. You always gotta have an orphan.
So he doesn't have. Yeah, he doesn't have. He has an older sister who she says in his hearing, "I'm not only his other older sister, but I'm also his mom and his dad."
It's some kind of juvenile delinquent hearing. And she gets him a BB gun because he loves guns. And we get the Elmer Fudd effect. Like early on. I love the Elmer Fudd effect. Bart, he goes, he's got his BB gun.
He's younger than 14. This is a flashback.
And he sees some chickens and he shoots at one of the baby chicks. Mm-hmm. And then he feels bad because he doesn't realize till the baby chick is dead that it would die. So much like Elmer Fudd, when he wants to hunt Bugs Bunny, when he finally gets him, he's very sad about it. The Elmer Fudd effect.
Mr. Wabbit, say something. Speak to me. I killed him.
I'm a big fan of the Elmer Fudd effect and seeing it in movies.
And because of that and the guilt that he felt, he vows never to kill anything ever again.
And some friends that he runs around with even testify on his behalf that one time they were faced with a mountain lion and he wouldn't even shoot to kill
it. And it was a mountain lion that had a bounty on it. And it's interesting because so we're in this trial because the first thing we see is him at 14 actually breaking into a jewelry store to steal a gun.
He's so horny for guns, he commits petty crimes.
But he trips and falls and gets caught. And then he's in this trial. And so his sister tells the story about the chick to say basically he's not dangerous. He just loves guns. And, you know, his friends tell the story about the mountain lion to say, yeah, he loves guns and he's the best shot ever, but he won't use it to kill. He can't do it.
There is a cut scene in this movie where the sister explains the Elmer Fudd effect to the courtroom. But, yeah, so the verdict is... Reform school, and then he goes into the army right after.
Because also the judge tells the sister, listen, I know you're about to, because she says, I'm about to get married, and the man I'm marrying has agreed to continue taking care of my little brother. Like, let us have him. And the judge says, there's so much about getting married. You're going to be busy. You don't want to take this on.
You're going
to
be queefing out these kids left and right. Well, she's been raising
him for however long anyway, but you don't want to take this on. So they send him to reform school, but the judge says, you know, this is not a punishment. This is to teach you how to be.
Mm.
And then we flash forward to they're probably, the kids are all, the three boys, they're probably in their mid-20s because we find out that Bart went to reform school for 4 years and then he went to the army and he went so far in the army that he was teaching other men how to use guns. That's what he told the judge is. The judge says, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I just want to shoot guns.
Yep.
I just want to shoot guns. But he got tired of teaching other people how to shoot guns.
Yeah.
That wasn't exciting enough.
Shooting instructor in the army. I guess he went in the army just after World War II.
Reform school. Yeah. Oh, yeah. World War II. And so he's hanging out with his buddies.
Him and his buddies, they're at a carnival. We're back in carnival realm, just like in... what was it called again? Nightmare Alley, which there were no alleys in that movie. And they see this girl doing her, like a William Tell routine. She's a sharpshooter. She's actually the credited lead. Peggy Cummins star as Annie Laurie Starr.
Yeah.
And she's a sharpshooter. And she's kind of got this makeup on that seems like almost of a generation before hers, you know?
She's got the very pencil-thin eyebrows. Yeah, her plucked face is eyebrows, very pale, very alabaster.
That kind of looks like that era from going out of the silent movies into the talkies. Those that Greta Garbo, I think you think of. Mm-hmm. She kind of has a look that's a little just a generation behind her. But yeah, she performs this act and she has a bet with the audience, puts up a lot of money, but the person who challenges only has to pay like a small percentage if they fail.
They'll win 500, but they have to put up 50. And if she beats them, she keeps the 50. So it's a great deal. Except Barton's a better shot.
He's a badass shot.
Oh, and the man instigating this bet, in charge of it, is this guy named Packy, who is sort of her, we think he's just maybe like her manager, right? He does the barking for to get people into her show, but we find out later that he holds a claim on her.
Yeah. But so they do the, now my favorite thing about this movie is, and the cinematography is by Russell Harlan. It's actually really good the way a lot of stuff is shot in this movie. That's the best part about this movie, is like the shots and the craft in that way. The story is a little like whatever, because you're trying to balance this weird moral tale in the Hays Code era, and it's entertaining, but it's a little like lopsided in terms of it's like hemming and hawing and this weird morality of you know, people who are gun horny. Yeah. But the shots and shit we see throughout the movie are actually very well done. There's great tracking shots. There's shots that follow a car driving, and the shots here when they're challenging each other for the thing are really smart.
This is one of my favorite moments, and it's because of the way they do the shot. And admittedly, I don't notice that stuff as much as you do in these films a lot of times. I'm just like in it, and I'm not like thinking technically how they're choosing to do things a lot of times. But I did in this moment because, you know, they do a couple of different shots and they're doing the same. And then there's this thing where you wear a crown of matches. And he puts on the crown first, and it goes, and the camera's behind him, watching her shooting these matches. And she gets all but the last one. She misses the last one. But then when she puts the crown on, it goes from his side. And he's, so it's always like from his perspective.
It's always behind him, but now you see her lined up.
And so you can see her face the whole time. So you see her face when she's so confident trying to shoot him. And then you see her face when he's shooting towards her.
It's actually really good.
And she realizes that he's going to beat her.
Her bit of acting here is actually really good. Well, of course, once you meet a guy, you'd never want to risk, being in this situation again. So why not hire this guy to be a part of your sharpshooting show?
Mm-hmm. And so and that he has happens. Nothing to do. He just got out of the army.
And
he's not going to go live with his sister and her kids.
Packy don't like it. He tries to call him off, says that, you know, she caught a body in St. Louis.
He doesn't tell him that.
But he's got some blackmail on her.
Yeah, so we find out that because she basically is like, you're going to hold this over my head, because he goes into her and he says, listen, you're not to meet with that man. You belong to me. I know what you did in St. Louis. But Bart has no idea that she killed a man in St. Louis. Mm. And we don't even know the circumstances of that until way later. But we do know that she killed someone, and that's Packy's deal. But Bart shows up anyway. He's not scared off by Packy. He shows up because they're supposed to have a date, and they run off.
Well, yeah, they have an idea to do their little gun sharpshooting routine, just the two of them.
Yeah,
but she is, you know, the subtitle of this is. Deadly is the female. And she is She's a gun fetishist.
She's a gun fetishist, but she's
gun pervert.
But she, it's not just guns though. Cause if it was just guns, they could just go around scraping by doing their show, getting off on the guns, right? Cause it is very, when they're shooting guns together, it's very much like foreplay. That's what you get out of that first scene. But she wants things. She wants money. She wants to live well.
Well, we've still got a tank full of gas anyway.
Bob?
Huh?
You remember what I was talking to you about?
Yeah.
Still feel the same way about it?
Somebody might get hurt.
How can anybody get hurt if we don't hurt them?
Dangerous, I tell you.
And she wants to use it, wants to get that with the guns, living a life of crime.
And before they, they get married immediately when they run away. And there's one little moment that I really love where she's driving them away in a car. And she says, we should have waited until Wednesday. And he says, why? And she says, that was payday. You know, and right then, you know, okay, she cares a lot about money as well as guns. And then immediately he's like, well, we better stop off in the next town and find a justice of the peace. And before they get married, they get married the minute they leave, before they ever do anything, because they can't be fucking if they're not married.
Like all they always do in these movies.
Right before they get married, he tells her, I feel like I have to come clean with you. I went to reform school. I got in trouble when I was younger and I went to reform school. And she goes, oh, is that what you needed to tell me? And he's like, yeah, I just want to be honest. And she goes, okay, well, I'm not good, but I want to be. Let's get married. Yeah. Like, she doesn't tell him her shit.
Yeah.
She just says, like, I'll try to be good for you.
I'm a gun pervert, but I'll try not to be as gun perverted. But he's a gun pervert, too.
But again, if they were just gun perverts, this would be fine. But
don't kink shame is what you're saying.
Yeah, don't kink shame. If they're just gun perverts, fine. But her problem is she wants things so much that she wants him to start sticking people up and robbing. And he doesn't want to do that, mostly because he doesn't want anyone to ever get hurt and he doesn't want to lie. Like, he wants to be honest. He wants to earn a living. But she basically says, you can't do it fast enough for me. We're not doing it. We tried to go to Vegas and do the show and it didn't work out. And listen, I told you I was rotten. So this is what I need from you. And if you don't go stick up with me, don't come back.
We have a stick up job where the camera's fixed in the back of the car and they're driving and side seat driving each other. And like,
they are just telling each other how to drive.
Now it's his next turn, so take it easy. Here comes a car. Watch that.
The camera maintains the whole thing, and a cop comes out.
You gonna play here?
No.
Well, it's an easy town on show. It's 3 tickets. You've covered the whole police force.
That's a pretty nice gun you got, too.
I'm sorry. I don't let anybody handle it. I killed a man with it last year.
Did he have it coming to him?
Yes, but it wasn't much fun watching him get down. He had an idea he was getting the first shot.
And he has to kind of stop her from like pulling the trigger a few times on people because that's just her fallout. And there are times when she's pulling that gun and she's ready that she gets this like twisted like look on her face. Like like she's getting horny over the thought of it.
She is, but it repulses him at the thought of killing someone or even seriously hurting someone.
This guy's shtick is weird. It's like being a chef and hating food. It's like, come on, man. Like, or being a chef.
No, that's not.
It's like being a chef, but you hate eating.
No, because you can be good at shooting and shoot things, but he won't even shoot animals. So it's not like he's even hunting.
Wouldn't even shoot a mountain lion that could drug his little ass up the side of a mountain.
He just likes the sport of it. He should have been in the Olympics, right? He should have been a rifleman.
That's really what they should have been doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we get some cool, and I love the shot of the robbery and like the maintained car shot. It's really creative stuff. And it is my favorite part of the movie is the way it's shot. Joseph H. Lewis and the cinematographer Russell Harlan, they did a really good job. I really enjoyed it. But eventually they waffle back and forth. Like, they want to go straight. They want to go clean. But then she always talks them back into it. And oh, and his friends, his old friends have been like kind of looking for him as well.
People figure out.
They're Bonnie and Clyde, essentially.
Absolutely. And Packy figures out who they are and obviously sells the story to a newspaper because he's that kind of guy, right?
Right.
And when he does, he tells about her killing someone in St. Louis. So now they are armed robbers who have a dead body in their past, right?
I might as well tell you. I've done it before. I killed a man in St. Louis, too, with Packy. We were sticking him up, and I got scared, and I killed him. It's always because I get scared. I get so scared, I can't even think. I can just kill.
So now it's like...
They did love each other, though.
We go together, Laurie. I don't know why. Maybe like guns and ammunition go together.
I'll do anything you want.
They so loved each other. And also, this main character, this Bart guy, he is, we were talking about the, because I can't stop thinking about him. He is like a man out of time. He's so charismatic. He has this feeling about him that if you told me that he was in one of the best pictures this year, I would believe you. Like he would fit anywhere.
He's weirdly normal. He kind of has a Jimmy Stewart vibe, but not exactly. Like there are archetypes of the time.
Yeah.
But he's not like your square jawed type or anything like that.
He's unique within that.
He does kind of seem like, yeah, he does seem kind of weirdly normal.
He's like the guy that everyone would have a crush on.
Yeah.
But not in a he's drop dead gorgeous kind of way. He's just, he's charismatic in this way that when he smiles, like there's this moment when he sees her in the show. And it's such a perfect expression on his face because he is just in awe of her. And his buddies are like, hey, look at him, look at him. But it's just this, it feels so real. Mm. Like if you told me they were actually in a relationship and he was actually head over heels in love with her, I would believe you because he's so genuine.
Yeah.
It's like an earnestness. So it's an interesting thing to see like his earnestness put up against her violence.
Why did you do it? Why do you have to murder people? Why can't you let them live?
Because I had to. Because I was afraid. Because they would have killed you. Because you're the only thing I've got in the whole world. Because I love you.
She tries to say it's because she's scared. She tries to say she wants to shoot people because she gets scared.
I don't think
that she gets off on killing people.
I'll kill you.
But it's almost like she thinks it's her right. If she needs to get out of there, she's going to use whatever tools, and this is her favorite tool.
Yeah.
You know? She's going to do what she has to do. So, yeah, there's this beautiful scene where, you know, everyone's looking for them. They don't know what to do. And they've ran their car off into a ditch, and it's snowing. And they're huddled up in this little shack. And she says to him, how long are we going to have to stay here? And he basically says, well, we got to wait till it clears up. We can't get anybody to help us. And he looks at her and he says, did you never think of this part? Did you never think of the part where we can't ask anyone for help because they'll figure out who we are? We cannot call a tow truck to even get our car out. We cannot go to a hotel. We cannot go anywhere because people are looking for us. I want out. I don't want to do this anymore. It's a brilliant scene. And she says to him, because she does also really love him, she says to him, okay, we'll get out. But listen, we don't have any money. We got to do one more big job. And it's always the one more big job that fucking gets you.
They can't go anywhere. And yet they do go anywhere.
They go and get jobs. Listen, hi, just keep your jobs.
Yeah.
And go straight. No one knows who you are.
They have a plan to go to the armor meat factory.
Do it.
Hot dogs. Armor hot dogs.
Sing it like you mean it.
What kinds of kids eat armor hot dogs?
Fat kids.
Skinny kids.
Kids who climb on rocks.
Tough kids.
Zee
kids.
Even kids with chicken pot
love hot dogs.
Armor hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Kids love to fight.
Doesn't this family know any songs that aren't commercials?
And I love that the front office is connected to the slaughterhouse here.
Mm-hmm. Well, he gets a job in the slaughterhouse. She gets a job as the secretary in the front
they're
office.
Set, I wonder how long they were at this place before they finally pulled the trigger.
It had to be at least weeks.
Okay.
Because because they knew the layout. She had a rapport with the woman she was working with. He had a rapport with the man he was working with. I mean, at least a week.
He works in the slaughterhouse. She works in the office. And the day comes where it's time to finally do the deed.
And they decide they're going to have to split up for like 3 months after so no one can find them.
And it's a nice shot where he's heading to the office and he's walking by all this like meat hanging from hooks. It's a long tracking shot that follows him all throughout as he's walking towards the actual offices themselves. A very nicely, probably underrated shot there.
And you made the comment that it's sort of foreshadowing in that he is dead meat.
And she's working, and it seems like they got like nice little jobs. I mean, her job seems cozier than his, but it is payroll and all the money is concentrated. And sure enough, they step up into the offices and they rob the place. And one of the ladies, you don't see it happen, but like a noise happens to where it's like it covers it up, but you know she shot this lady.
The woman pulls the alarm.
Right.
And so as the second the woman pulls the alarm, she shoots her. She shoots. And they're running and you don't see her get shot. So you think maybe she missed, but you know she didn't.
And it plays it up so quick like you could doubt, but she shoots and you see a quick second of a cop like grabbing his chest.
Yep.
So, and he doesn't know because everything's just happened so fast.
And then this is where, so she's just killed two people, but they're driving away and the cops are chasing them, right? So she's driving and they're trying to get away and he gets in the back seat and he's like aiming the gun and he doesn't want to even shoot the cops that are chasing them. And he ends up blowing a tire.
Well, he's squeamish over shooting the tire.
Because he doesn't want to hurt the man. But we find out later that it's because in that moment, he scared himself because he knew he could shoot the tire. And he thought, well, I could also just shoot the driver. And that's what he doesn't like. Like, that's what scares him.
Yeah, but we know he's not going to do that.
No, he's not. So
why even have the thought?
I know. But so they get to her second car and they say goodbye and truly drive 10 feet from each other. And then he gets out of the car that's all shot up and hops in with her. And they're like, we can't be apart.
They can't be apart.
They make it all the way to California and they know they only have a certain amount of time. So they got to like get to Mexico or somewhere, but they got to figure it out. And as they're going, they have the stolen money and they end up getting tracked with these bills to where they are. And then they have nothing. They end up running. They left all their stuff in the hotel. All the money's gone. They literally have not even any of their money and they have nowhere to go. And they end up hopping a train and going back to his sister's house.
Gee, what cute kids.
His friends show up. They track him there. And then they have to run from there. And they'll finally, they end up in a swamp.
Yeah.
And you hear the friends calling out to them. And it implies that there's a lot of police.
You hear dogs at one point searching for them. And he says, like, I can find my way out of here in the morning because I used to camp here when I was a kid. So it's like a place all three of them are very familiar with. And that's the problem is his friends are also very familiar with this place. So
the friends come out of the fog and she stands up to shoot his friends. And he's like, no. And then he shoots her. But then that's when the police then shoot him after he shoots her to prevent her from shooting his friends. And the gun perverts are dead. Mm-hmm. The end. Gun Crazy from 1950, directed by Joseph H. Lewis. Written by Old Trumbo. With great cinematography by Russell Harlan. The acting's good. Mm-hmm. The shots are great. Mm-hmm. The story itself is okay. It's okay. It's a fun movie, though. But I would just call the story okay. And I think it's just the hemming and hawing of the Bart character. I like the actor's performance. Yeah. But it was just like, just shoot the fucking tire, bro.
Absolutely. Just shoot the tire. There are little moments, though, that are so funny that maybe shouldn't be. Like, for example, when they're leaving his sister's house and they're going to run from his friends, because one of his friends has grown up to be a sheriff and one has grown up to be a newspaper man. So the reason they find them at the house is because the next door neighbor called in and said, the windows are closed and she says her kids can't come out to play. And it's like, what? So, but they know that they're friends. So they call the sheriff to just be like, something might be going on at our friend's sister's house. But then they're going to leave and they go to get in the car and here comes our lead lady with his sister's baby.
I thought...
Nobody dare shoot if we take the baby with us.
Give him to me.
But he'd be safe. They wouldn't dare.
Where are Ruby and the others?
I locked them in the garage.
All right, get in.
Oh, yeah.
And she goes...
She's going to kidnap the baby.
She goes, we got to take the baby. They won't shoot us if we have the baby. And he goes, you're crazy. What did you do with my sister and the other kids? And she's like, they're locked in the garage. And he takes the kid and puts him in an outside playpen.
Yeah.
And then they get in the car and drive away. And then the shot turns and his two buddies are standing right there and have watched this whole scene. It's like, that is one of the funniest moments to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody dare shoot if we take the baby with us.
I could not believe. She's like frantic. She's like, they won't shoot us if we take the baby. And it's like, what are you going to do with a baby?
That seems like something you could have cut out, but I'm glad they didn't. Yeah, we got to take this baby. It's like, no. That's like the one time he puts his foot down. It's like, we're not kidnapping the baby. All right? That's like the only time he's like, he like speaks up for rationality and wins. Like, no, we're not doing that shit. Yes, Gun Crazy. You're going to give 1 through 5. I'm going to give it 1 through 5 combined for best out of 10. I think it is a solid 3.75.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, let's take a look at where we're at. Gun Crazy shares the rankings. It's a B+, a high B. I think if some of the story elements weren't feeling so contrived and with the hemming and hawing, it could have hit the A pretty easy.
Yeah.
But the good acting and the great shots left it in the high B. So it shares the rankings with Eyes Wide Shut. Horror of Dracula, In Bruges, It's Alive, Miracle on 34th Street, Man on Fire. It's at least as good, if not better.
It's Alive.
Than those movies. We love It's Alive.
I know.
First Larry Cohen.
I love it.
We love that one. So check the show notes for links, other places to find us. Like, subscribe. We like it when you subscribe. Leave a comment. Say whatever you want. Comments, corrections. We love corrections. Sometimes we miss some things. Sometimes we get things wrong. It happens. We're not going to be offended if you're like, actually, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Gun Crazy. What did you think about Gun Crazy? Tell me about it. Always check the links for if you can easily find. A lot of these movies are easy to find online on the Internet Archive, Daily Motion, YouTube. Sometimes they're on there. If I can find the movie, I will link it. So all month long, check the links if you want to check out the movies we're talking about. You can find them pretty well, the older ones most of the time. So that said, supposing we get on out of here.
Supposing we do.